from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Path Blue Studios here in Johnston proper.
What was that?
Here's the thing. I was caught between I was going to say, like, a Here's Johnny. But then that wasn't going to work out.
Yeah.
Here in Johnston proper. And so I backed out of it at the end, and then it just stunk.
Just had to kind of commit to it.
I couldn't even rescue it. And so I had to go with it. Hey, thanks for pointing that out, Booba.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for.
All right. So here's what we got going on the show tonight. So I think we're going to, here's what brings you the danger right here is, what was it? It was a few weeks back, maybe 3 weeks back. It was just going to be me and Booba. And so we thought to ourselves, hey man, no one wants to listen to that jazz. And so we skipped the show. And I'll be doggone if that is not the circumstance in which we find ourselves in tonight.
We're here again.
Yeah. So we're going to press on with this deal. We're going to see if the Earth stays on its axis. And me and Booba are going to try to walk through the Life from the Path program. So if you're a normal listener to the show, you know the kind of trouble you've gotten yourself into. Get some coffee and some hand soap and do what you got to do.
Coffee and some hand soap.
Hey, I don't like to tell people how to live, you know.
All right, fair enough.
Where Jesus speaks, I speak. Where he doesn't say anything about coffee and hand soap, you got to live your life.
I like it.
Okay. Boo, if I remember correctly, we're going to do some advice tonight, and you have, it's not Pope style, it's stuff you're supposed to stop doing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's not quite a Pope style. It's just something I need to stop doing because I realize that I'm going way beyond my means of life goal planning kind of deal, right? And so I found myself really attached to travel shows recently. And I think to myself, man, I'm a world traveler because I've left the country once for a month on a work trip everything was paid for me. I did nothing but show up.
Right.
And that makes me qualified to be any kind of a world traveler anyway, which it really doesn't.
Right.
And so I found myself watching a bunch of travel shows recently and trying to relate to them.
I've been part of this?
Right, exactly. Trying to find myself if I were in Okinawa, I would definitely be doing the same thing. But I've heard of this place before. Right, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And so I found myself romanticizing the fact of me going and traveling around the world. Here's one of the biggest reasons I'm not, I need to stop doing this. I hate traveling. I hate being on planes. Planes is one of my least favorite things on the planet Earth.
Right.
And I'm talking about I want to be a globe traveler and go all over the place. I recently told someone that one of my life goals before hitting 30 is to go to all 7 continents. And then I realized how dumb that was in comparison to A, everything I know about myself, and B, everything I know about God, and from the fact that I probably shouldn't be planning that far ahead and try and figure out tomorrow before I try and figure out before 30. And so it will never be me.
How many places can't you train the Western Hemisphere?
I suppose that's for the most part.
And then fly over to the closest thing on the Eastern Hemisphere.
That sounds terrible.
And then train your way up.
45-minute flights, and I'm upset. It's ridiculous.
Wait, is there a difference though between 45 minutes and 3 hours? Is it just the whole experience?
It's the whole experience.
So
it's any of that, the turbulence deal. So here's the deal. I'm not in any way afraid of flying.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of it. There's no problems. I'm not worried about the plane going down. I'm really not.
Yeah.
It's the, that gut feeling again when you hit a bump or something like that, your stomach kind of jumps into your throat.
Yeah.
And all the kids love it, and that's why you go on amusement parks and rides and stuff like that.
Right.
I hate that. That makes me upset, and it is awful. And so anything that's going to involve that, which is pretty much every flight ever, I can't stand and want to avoid. But for some reason, I have thought to myself, I need to become a world traveler where I'm going to be doing this constantly, even though I have absolutely no money to do this and probably will never do it.
No, you're right. That's an interesting... That's an interesting distinction you're making.
Right, exactly. So I realized I need to stop myself from doing these because this is. I mean, I'm not talking about I'll watch it every once in a while.
Yeah.
I'm talking hours upon hours. Tonight alone, I watch 4 hours of travel shows. And it's not even 10, it's 10 o'clock now.
I don't know, that seems a little bit normal.
I read one chapter of my Bible.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're getting at.
So where I'm coming from is the fact that I spend so much time fantasizing about this possibility to where I'm a world traveler and like all these things interest me and I want to know more about, you know, I want to know more about France and I want to know more about, the Asian countries and I want to know more about what it'd be like to go to Patagonia and all this stuff, right? Like I think that'd be an incredible experience and all this kind of stuff. But at the same point in time, like I haven't spent any time trying to figure out what it's like to be in God's kingdom. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say any time, but I haven't spent time close to the amount of time that I do doing this than I do reading my word or praying to God or talking to people. Like, I'm not avoiding social situations, but they're definitely being avoided by the amount of time that I'm spending on this.
Somewhere there's a Patagonian man who's looking forward to talking to you, and you've just eliminated that ability.
Well, that's a possibility.
That's a left times. All right. I don't know. So, I don't mind planes. I mean, I get nervous just in general. About traveling, for no particular reason, right? Not particularly scared about anything. It's just, it seems like something to be nervous about. And my body's like, yes, this seems right. If you were not, you should be nervous about this because people are.
I'm glad you've accepted that.
World traveler. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And so I just,
what are you going to do on seven continents? Like,
be there. Like legitimately. So I have no plans for those continents.
You just going to stand there.
I just want to go there and like experience stuff. Like the traveling that I've done has been mainly for work. Like I've traveled a little bit outside of work. Like I've done some personal trips, whether it be 12 hours across the country or whether it be, you know, an hour and a half over to Omaha or 2 hours over to Omaha. Like that's the kind of traveling I've done, and I enjoy that. Like I really enjoy going to different places, meeting new people, experiencing those things. It's a lot of fun for me. But it's not as big of a life thing as I'm making it seem like it should be with the amount of time that I invest in travel shows.
No, okay. I think I get what you're saying. So like we've had similar experiences. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I was in the Philippines for 6 weeks training, doing some training and stuff. And like at the time, it felt like it defined you, right? Like,
oh, absolutely.
It had, you know, like, hey, I've been to Asia, you know? And then here's the thing. That's been, 3 years. It's been 3 years since I've been to the Philippines and my life is no different for it.
right?
Like there's nothing about my day to day that gives a flying damn.
Right.
That I was somewhere overseas, you know? Like it was something big there. There's certainly some stories that are associated with
right.
it. But like, it just doesn't really define you unless you want to drag it out. You know, it's like, you know what it is, Buva? It's like, going overseas and trailing it for the rest of your life is like playing AAA ball. Right? You're gonna tell that story all the time like you're a baller. You're not a baller. You played AAA ball for a while.
That's fair.
You are not good enough to can go to the majors, and now you're telling that story for 40 years. And I grant that it's a cool part of your existence, but at some point it stops being part of who you are, like a year after it happened.
Am I the dude that's 20 years out of high school football that's still talking about that touchdown he made once?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, that's you.
I've been trying to avoid that, but I totally just told someone a couple weeks ago, like in my credentials for training, I said that I've trained on two continents. And it flowed out of me, and then I realized immediately how pompous the statement was and how awful and how quickly I should have taken it back. But like everyone accepted it, like, oh,
that's the, yeah, okay. That's the problem, right? Is that like it seems inherently awesome or like it speaks to your skills.
Right.
The only thing it speaks to is that someone was like, obviously it costs money to get somewhere and someone looked at you and said, yeah, we'll pay that to send you over here. But right. But like, maybe it was different for you, right? But when I was in the Philippines, I'm training the exact same thing I would have been training where in the United States, my feet just happen to be on a different continent while I'm doing it.
Right.
I don't have any special skills. I don't speak Tagalog. Like there's nothing about what it is that I do.
Yes.
That shifted substantially for having stood there, except for they paid to move my pasty white behind from Iowa to the Asian continent.
That's true. The only difference was my commute to work was about 24 hours.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
The only
That's
difference.
It. So like there's no skill in standing somewhere else. That's really what I'm saying. Someone's willing to pay me to stand elsewhere. Please hire me. I'm well qualified.
All
Just
right,
stand
fine.
Elsewhere.
All right. So we started this out by Buva saying that he probably shouldn't watch the travel shows because he keeps fantasizing about the situation where he's going all over the world. But then it kind of turned around to, I need to stop being a prideful beast about the fact that I've trained in a different place because it's basically a company paid for me to fly over there and stand.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
Yeah, and really, even the phrase, like when someone says, hey, it seems like a big thing to say, hey, I'm a world traveler. But really, all it means is that I have the freedoms that other people don't have to not have to be in the same place all the time.
That's true. I've stood at their places.
Yeah. I've had money. Now, I mean, there's certainly people doing cool things traveling around the world, but like, it also implies certain things about your life that you generally have the money to be a world traveler.
True.
There's not something here that's otherwise tying you down so that you're able to travel the world. But really, like, you didn't invent the plane that you flew on. You
right.
just handed over certain money to be allowed to travel on something. The guy that built the plane's impressive to me. That, like,
that's true.
Bernoulli still is impressive to me, right? But like,
his principles are wonderful.
And like, you didn't commission the airport at which you landed at. You probably didn't learn every language you went to. You got in the cab that some other cab driver who works his bones off to feed his family. He drove you to wherever you went. You didn't build a hotel. These are not all
That's
accomplishments
true.
Of yours.
I paid money to sit down and let someone take me somewhere and then stand there for a bit and then sit down again and take me back to where I'm from and then stand there.
And you said, I've been to the Philippines.
Yeah, I'm a world traveler. If you haven't noticed how cultured I am, did you see what I brought back with me?
Yeah. Now, hold on. Take world traveling out of it. Are there equivalent things like on the domestic side or just normal life stuff where you take credit for something that seems like it's the big news, but really it's not significantly different?
Whenever I have a good training class, like I take, people try and praise me for it and say that I've done such a great job because they're doing, you know, good in sales or they're doing good with customer service or, you know, whatever. And then people give me awards and stuff like this. And ultimately it's like, I read some stuff. And then I kind of stood in front of people and talked for a couple hours, and then they did their job.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty much it. That's exactly what my job is. If I were to make a realistic, non-pompous resume, it'd be, I'm okay at reading, and people listen to me when I stand in front of them, and they're getting paid to do it.
And they're getting paid to do it, yeah.
And then they do their job. That's my whole resume, man.
Although, here's the deal. In that context, though, what's interesting is that making disciples, like the act of disciple-making, actually is very much that.
Yeah.
Is the biggest gap in your ability to actually make disciples is one, if you follow Jesus and then you take somebody with you, and taking somebody with you is as simple as, hey man, do I hook up with the dude? Do I talk to him about Jesus? And do I care about him? It is the most, it requires very little skill.
Yeah.
It requires a passion for Jesus and a love for other people. And if you got those two things down, the level of skill that is involved in making disciples isn't that much. Because frankly, Holy Spirit does all types of the work, right?
Yeah, that's true. God doesn't really check our resume when it comes to whether or not we're going to be the one talking to somebody about Him. He doesn't really check to make sure we're a good speaker. He doesn't really check to make sure we have a lot of, like, you know, charisma and all this different stuff. He's kind of like, hey, you got to love me and know a little bit.
Yeah.
And then let me talk through that.
Yeah.
Ooh. Man.
So
why are we having so much trouble with this then?
Because I think we don't get it, right? I think we're waiting for, a lot of times I'm going to say the harsh thing off the bat.
Yeah.
One is that I think we don't, we're actually not pursuing Jesus on our own. And
that's
so,
fair.
So if you're not pursuing Jesus on your own, it becomes difficult for you to then talk to someone about pursuing Jesus. And, frankly, then you have to have methods. You have to have pamphlets. You have to have, some programming. You have to have kind of a layout and outline of things you're going to do. Is like, here's your 12 steps to making disciples. And you need that because you actually don't know Jesus all that well that you can sit down and talk to someone about him without having to have a program about it. And so that's one of the biggest gaps is that, if you're personally following Jesus, it takes no effort to bring somebody with you. In fact, you want to. You're like, hey, I'm going anyway. Hey, man, I love you. You want to come along? Because
yeah.
I'm following Jesus. You in? You know, and like, it's not making disciples is not a burden. And frankly, it's not difficult. All you're doing is introducing people to Jesus. Where the trouble comes in is when you don't know Jesus. When you don't know Jesus and you don't know who you're introducing people to, there's things that are coming out your mouth because it's in the pamphlet, and you're like, I half believe that, but I'm not sure. I don't have good stories about him answering prayer in my life. I don't know if I've completely changed. I keep looking at the thing on the computer and like whatever all this business is that you're involved in. And like, it's really, we stink at being disciples of Jesus Christ. And so we have trouble making disciples of Jesus Christ. That's really your barrier.
That's kind of interesting because, so I took a year long discipleship class. It would have been 2 years ago now. It was,
yep.
It was a whole year. We didn't talk about discipleship until about month 10.
Uh-huh.
Maybe month 11. Like, I think it was the last 2 months we really got into, here's your community, here's how you speak to them.
Yeah.
The first 10 months of it was building our relationship with Christ.
Yeah.
And it didn't make sense to me, but now it definitely does. Like, I need to have that foundation before I was able to even walk out and talk to anybody. And ultimately, I didn't need to go through a year-long class that was all these different modes of communication and possibilities and ways to present yourself and things like that. It's make sure you know how to present yourself in front of your Lord, and then just make sure you're doing that, and then people will watch and see that, and then they will ask about that, or they will inquire about that, or they'll see what you're doing, and then that will interest them.
Yeah.
That's one of the most powerful pieces of discipleship I've ever seen is, if you love Jesus, if you live that out, and then you love his people, people are naturally gonna go, hey man, what's that about?
Yeah.
You're kinda weird in that situation. Why are you loving them that way? That dude just did this to you, or that gal just did this to you. Why are you loving them? It's like, oh, well, it's funny you should ask that. Let me tell you about my Lord Jesus.
Yeah, Jesus is
what
his own
method.
What he
tells me to do.
Like you don't need separate things. He's his own method.
Yeah,
the
that's
presence
true.
Of the Lord and Savior is sufficient for whatever character you're going to run into.
Ah, well, fair enough. I guess we kind of just made discipleship easy.
It is easy. I think that's again the gap is like we look for clever ways to do something. We look to hey, you got to change your personality. Hey, you got to here's how to deal with 10 different types of people. And look biblically of the wide array of folks that Jesus is interacting with, even with his own disciples, right?
Mm-hmm.
He it's not like he employed different things for different guys.
That's true. He just stayed the same.
He was just being Jesus around folk, and then that it seems to be its own compelling nature. And so I think that's the thing is like we approach it oddly, but I think the reason that we do that though is to be honest, we're not pursuing Jesus on our own.
Yeah.
And so it seems like something that we have to learn. And here's if I'm going to make a qualification, it's going to be this, is that I think the distinction is more if you are actively and faithfully pursuing Jesus, not if you've reached some sort of apex of you know absolutely everything there is to know.
Right.
And like the reason this is kind of dashing around in my mind is because I had said something what was it? It had been yesterday when I talked about like we have trouble talking to people about Jesus because we don't know him. And like you're never going to know God completely, right? Nature of God is that you will probably not know him completely.
Right.
But I would say a person who just met Jesus and is pursuing him passionately will be just as effective as someone that's known him for 10 years as long as you are pursuing him it honestly and rightly. Then I think you can make disciples because the deal is like you're just pursuing him and then you're inviting people to come along. That's what discipleship looks like.
Yeah.
There's not, it doesn't have to be, hey, I'm at a certain level and now I'm qualified to go talk to people. Just pursue him faithfully. Don't have things flying out your mouth that you don't know are true. Look for the things, look for Jesus, find him in scripture and then share that with other people and you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
But I think that's our distinction. We don't know how to pursue Jesus and, we perhaps, especially when it comes to discipleship, we are trying to find methods within the church to help us to make disciples, whereas natural pursuit of Jesus actually guides people to want to make disciples, and they just simply invite people along to things that they're doing.
Well, there you go. There's the easy deal.
Yeah.
You want to learn how to go disciple people? Go love Jesus. Pursue him, and it'll happen.
Yeah, call it the come and see, right? I mean, that's the Jesus approach, right? I got something going on. Why don't you come and check it out?
There you go.
I'm going. You going? Done. Discipleship.
Cool.
Discipleship 101.
I like it.
Nick Harris, what are your thoughts?
I feel the same way. You got to seek the kingdom first, and then you get the riches later, here and in the next life. So, you know, I feel the same way.
Yeah,
I like it. Cool.
Making disciples. All right. What was that? Hold on. I saw something before we get to some advice. What did I read? Oh, yeah. Hey,
You vet out this article before you read through it?
I scanned it.
Oh.
And so, unfortunately, Boova, this is going to follow. This is going to fall mainly on you. There was an article in Relevant Magazine about 20 things every 20-something should know how to do.
Oh, no.
And so I'm not a 20-something. Nick Harris, are you a 20-something?
Not anymore.
Nick Harris not a 20-something either. That's what I thought. All right, Boova, this is on you.
All right, man.
I guess we'll see. Harris and I might be a little bit past, but we'll see if this applies. But this is 20 things every 20-something should know how to do. All right, Boova, we're going to see
Man, I'm going to fail this list. I just
all right. Number one, make a great breakfast.
Oh, yes.
You should be able to craft a great meal for any occasion, but this is the most important meal of the day. Use real butter, large eggs, fresh mushrooms, cheese, whatever. But you know the ins and outs and invite a lot of people over to eat it with you regularly.
I don't think I invite a lot of people over for breakfast regularly.
Hey, man, that's a weird time to invite people to your
right.
place.
Right, who comes over for breakfast?
Yeah.
That wasn't there the night before.
Yeah, you go out for breakfast. You
right.
You don't home-cook breakfast.
I don't think I've ever, in any situation in my entire life, have been invited to or have invited anyone to a breakfast at my house.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, okay, fine. I agree, though, with the fact that you should be able to make yourself breakfast. All the people around me that are my age, all of them say, oh, man, I skipped breakfast this morning. I didn't have time.
Yeah.
I'm like, you need to wake up 10 minutes earlier, make yourself a couple scrambled eggs or a protein shake, and that way you don't look like a dead zombie right now. I agree.
Okay.
Breakfast.
Okay.
Number one, done.
Okay, you're in. Yeah. Invite people over for breakfast.
That's creepy.
I'm going to do that.
Don't invite me over for breakfast.
Yeah. Well, maybe not you.
Cool.
Okay. All right. Someone try that. It doesn't have to be us here. If it, one of you guys are listening, maybe you try invite someone over. Maybe you've done it. Hey, in fact, shoot me an email or hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. I'm just interested in what that looks and what time does it happen. Because, like, maybe it's just how I do breakfast, but, like, I wake up and I eat quickly,
right,
and then I leave if I eat at all. I don't get up with time, get myself looking like I should have folk over, prepare a meal, and then have people to distribute it to.
That just sounds stressful.
That you got to get up at like 5:30 to get that kind of thing done. I still got to go to work, man. I can't have...
Right.
Because here's the deal. If I want to invite someone over, you want to have time to chat with them and stuff. But, like, I got time for your chatty Cathian. I got to get into work.
What about, like, a Saturday breakfast, though? Like, hey, you had it. We hung out this weekend. You want to come over to my place for a Saturday breakfast?
What would you make?
What would I make for a Saturday? Oh, dude, I do eggs and bacon. It has to be something hearty on a Saturday breakfast. You can't do something small. I'd make either, a breakfast casserole,
uh-huh,
or I'd do just, like, straight up eggs, bacon, and, like, you know, sausage, hash browns, all that good stuff.
Harris, you cook a fancy breakfast?
I've been known to whip some up.
You put what do you do? Like pastries, cinnamon rolls, or bacon? What something hearty? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, bacon, sausage, eggs.
Yep.
The works, huh?
Croissants. I mean,
hey man, I feel like we're going to Harris's for breakfast.
I'm not making the croissants. I can do hash browns sometimes.
Hey man, hash browns are tough.
That's true.
I can't cook hash browns to save my life. They don't get crispy. You know what I like? I like greasy truck stop hash browns.
Yeah.
And I try to make them at home, but I can't pull that stuff off.
That's the truth. They're never nearly as good as Ethel at the gas stop. But,
yeah.
All right.
All right, here we go. Number two, argue kindly.
Yeah.
In an increasing literature, you'll be better for it. Learn how to have your own opinions and how to put them firmly and politely in a way that invites spirited conversation.
Yes.
Now, I feel
I want to.
What, you want to or you're capable of?
No, when I want to. If it's a certain situation where I have no intentions of doing a kind argument and it's going to be the full beast argument,
yeah,
I can do that.
Okay.
But sometimes if it has to be like a delicate situation, I can do it.
I feel like I can't do that. But it's not the kindly part. I tend people to stop talking after I say things. Like, I'm not rude about it, but I think I'm overly verbose. Like,
yes, man.
I talk for a long time, and then no one has anything else to talk about.
I've been on a radio show with you for about 6 years now, and I would agree with that statement entirely.
Yeah, I got to learn. I'm not much of a conversationalist. I got to change my ways. All right. Well, I'm not 20-something. It's not my problem. Three.
Did you have this mastered in your 20s?
No. I've gotten better over time, unfortunately. Three. Hold a conversation with someone of any age. You can do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the deal is I can do that, but I'm not great at it. I have kid and old people mode, and it's sometimes not very, it stops treating them like a people and they become cartoon characters.
So you talk to the kids or kind of just very cartoonized, and then to the old people you sound like you're talking to an old whippersnapper?
When it comes to the old folks, I use phrases like colostomy bag, like, three times more often than I would in normal conversation. Like, I just assume I know what their interests are. It's ridiculous.
There's a certain level of catering to your audience, I guess, but I feel like using colostomy bag in any situation besides a medical one is not necessary.
Hey, do you sit and pee or do you sit and pee? Like, that's what I'm saying.
No, you need to stop trying to relate to these people. They do not need to be related to. Relate to the fact that they were your age once. That's all you need to do.
That's what I'm saying. I'm awkward in that regard. Okay.
Right, fair enough.
Number four, parallel park.
It depends on the vehicle. My dad taught me how to do it in a 15-passenger van, and so surprisingly enough, anything smaller, I'm terrible at.
Okay.
I can do, if you give me a van right now, I can parallel park it. But like my little Chrysler, I have a lot of difficulty with it.
Tricky. Okay. Number five, defend your media choices. Whether you like Kendrick, Kings of Leon, or Kesha, should be able to articulate why. The media we consume affects us, and you should be able to explain to yourself why you're listening, watching, and reading the things that you are. Does this occur to you? This has not happened to me.
I don't think I've ever had to defend my... I mean, I think I've had to defend my choices against certain types of media. Like,
why aren't you listening to
watching
this?
Why aren't you
thing?
Listening to that? Like, I cannot stand country music with a fiery passion. And the people that love country music are normally the ones that are willing to get in a non-kindly argument with me about country music and my hatred for it.
Right.
And so I find myself having to defend that more often than I defend my musical choices.
Okay. No, that makes
for
sense.
For versus against.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had to defend my media choices. Maybe in here, maybe I've watched something, folks are like, hey, man, you sure you'd be taking that in? But, like, very rarely, but, like, it happens.
I suppose that's a valid point is that the right thing to put into your mind thing? Yeah. I mean, I've had that conversation, but I was thinking more from the perspective of, like, your likes and dislikes.
Here's the thing, though, is, like, that always turns into an ultra-pharisaical conversation. Because the truth is, it's, like, nothing that otherwise is not a worship tune can, like, you're going to, why are you listening to the Bob Seger album?
Right. How many times was Jesus' name said in that song?
That's what I thought. Fire Lake ain't about no Jesus Christ. Put you in the lake of fire. You don't love him.
Hey, man, just tell people you listen to instrumentals.
Yeah, but Jesus don't need no bass.
Don't need no bass.
You don't hear no bass lyre going on in the Psalms. Psalm says I play the high tenor. all right, 6, limit your online life.
Oh, I'm terrible.
This cannot be overemphasized. If you find most of your free time spent on the internet, it's time to make some choices. If you're checking your phone at every awkward pause, delete that Facebook app.
I'm like a 13-year-old girl trying to check her MySpace when it comes to anything online. Like, I am all over it. I have a Twitter that I don't use, but I still check it. Like, I've never used... I think I've tweeted maybe 5 things in my entire time of having a Twitter account.
Yeah.
I check it every once in a while. There's nothing there, but I do it anyway. Instagram and my... I have Instagram, I have Facebook, I have Twitter, and I use 2 of them, but check all of them constantly.
So you have media, but you don't social on it.
Facebook, I try not to be overly present just because I've been overly present before.
Yeah.
Like at one point in time, I was posting every day and all over the place, and I commented on every post I saw, and then it kind of got overwhelming to where I realized that I was unnecessarily present in everyone's media life.
Right.
And started kind of... you know, looking from afar, if you will.
Yeah.
And then I kind of do the same thing on the Instagram. Like, I do more of my Instagram is interests than it is social perspective. Like, I have a buddy and I, we really are getting into doing actual types of barbecue. Like, really getting into, like, smoking different types of barbecue and stuff like
that. Okay, yep.
And so I follow certain Instagram places that have to do with barbecue. And so it's not from the perspective of like a gluttony thing where I'm always looking to eat and stuff like that. It's more from the perspective of, you know, what they do with that. I'd like to look into that and see if I can do that myself.
Right.
That is more of my Instagram. But Facebook, yeah, it was definitely a problem at one point in time. So, I mean, I suppose I can say I've gotten better than I was in my early 20s. But I've definitely got a lot of room to work on it.
Hmm.
That's where I'm at with
that. Why do I feel like... I feel like I tagged you on something on Twitter. Had to do with your feet.
You probably have. Yes. I remember that because no one tags me in anything on Twitter.
Hold on a second.
The only Twitter follow that I've... excuse me. The only Twitter activity I've ever had was the Live from the Path Twitter.
Okay, yeah, that sounds right. I feel like we... oh, I don't remember what it was, but it had something to do with, like, your a foot something, and then some podiatrist in Canada...
Yes!
Yeah.
That's right.
What was that, though?
It was the foot... was it the foot doctor or the
It was a podiatrist. Dang it, I don't remember what it was, but I feel like
I thought it was called the foot doctor or something. Whatever. Yeah, no, I remember what you're talking about.
It seemed funny.
that you tagged me in something that actually didn't have anything to do with feet, and then a podiatrist comments on it?
Yeah.
Or retweets it or something?
Yeah, like a podiatrist in Canada or something.
Hey, man, maybe podiatrists in Canada don't have a lot to do.
Okay,
besides
maybe not.
Search the Twitter.
All right, here we go. Number 7. We're talking about the 20 things every 20-something should know how to do. This one was approach a stranger. Whether it's for directions, a favor, or even just to pass the time on an airplane, knowing how to strike up a conversation on a plane without being a Pharisee. Is that you?
Yes, absolutely. Is this list expecting everyone to be an extrovert and that's how you get through your 20s?
Yeah, this seems like a...
yeah, like if you can't talk to people, you therefore can't leave your 20s successfully?
Yeah, that seems like what it is.
I feel like there's plenty of people that could live a very closed-in life and have 2 or 3 good friends and then not need to reach out to a bunch of different people, and they made it through their 20s. Better than most of the extroverts I know.
Here's the deal. I've never asked for directions. My phone does that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're living in an archaic world where we need that.
What has that done to our society, though? You don't have to... no one has ever had to stop and ask for directions because we just get them ourselves. It's.
I don't think it's done anything to our society.
Maybe it's ruining it.
Okay, here's the deal. If anything is ruining our society, I don't think it's the fact that we have GPS.
It's
on our phones.
Ruined it.
Oh, whatever.
I'm feeling distant from people.
Texting. If there's any social perspective that has ruined our society, it's texting.
Yeah, it's not ruined it. All right, here we go. 8, stand up for yourself. Whether it's your boss shooting down an idea before you've explained it or a guy shouting rude comments as you're walking by.
I'm being negatively catcalled on my
Move,
way down
I
the street.
Hate your posture. You walk like a doofus. Yeah, people are cruel.
Defend yourself?
What is that? Hold on. Stand up for yourself. Like, what's the right reaction there? Do I need to stand up for myself?
No, I do not walk like a doofus.
The right random
reaction
man.
Is to be able to maturely go, all right, that dude has more time on his hands than he needs to.
Yeah.
Sweet. And then keep walking down the road.
Yeah.
You don't need to... that's ridiculous.
We let that go.
It's all... We've developed this whole thing where if you don't stand up for yourself, you're a wuss. And then you're inviting yourself to be made fun of more. No, you're not.
No.
Just... you don't have to say anything if somebody yells at you.
Right. Like,
just look at them and just wave at them. Love on them for Jesus if you need to, I guess. If somebody stops you and has to have an angry conversation with you, you can freak them out a little bit by loving on them. But
yeah, now here's the thing. It's like, one of the things you have to be careful with is how much you validate someone's influence on your
right.
life.
Yes.
Right? Hey, you walk like a doofus. Hey, I've decided to engage in that. You've given that man permission
right.
to influence your life. Let him go. You don't have to deal with it as if it is something that is defensible, right? If it is a bit of reality that needs to, where you need to set the record straight. If it's obviously not true, you can just let that go.
Yeah.
There's no reason to fight. Well, you fight in a lie. At its base nature, if someone says something about you that is true and it is offensive, your right reaction is to change your ways so it's not true anymore. If someone says something about you that is a lie and is offensive, your right reaction is to not validate it.
And here's the deal. So from a slightly less good-natured perspective, if you want to make somebody mad that's trying to like make fun of you or make you need to stand up for yourself, don't say anything. Because then they'll start getting upset that you're not reacting in any way to their yelling at you or something like that. I've seen more people get upset because I don't react than when I do react.
Yeah,
it's actually kind of funnier.
Yeah, their point. I mean, that's the point, right? You say something to someone, your attempt is to control them in some way or another.
Right.
If I say this, you will react in X, Y. I own you in that moment. I own your reactions. I own, you know, what you think of yourself, whatever it is, right? And so the extent that you do not react, all you've said to them is, hey, I caught your comment. You don't own me.
Yeah. You said something I didn't really care about.
Now you're just a guy talking out into the air. You look silly.
Yeah.
Just wave back at him. Thanks, bro.
Yeah. Say I was wrong.
I think that's something that's not just a problem for 20 to 30-year-olds. I think that's everybody.
It says, whatever it is, you should always be looking for where you might have messed up. I was wrong is a magical little sentence that diffuses conflict and brings peace to any situation. You should have it at the top of your go-to phrases.
I don't know just about the phrase itself, but yeah, I would agree. I think being able to admit that you're wrong is a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes we can get incredibly bullheaded about our own opinions, our own actions, and what we do, and I think sometimes even though we completely understand that we have screwed up, we're just awful at saying it. And I think I would agree with that entirely. I think that it's an incredibly powerful thing to be able to go, yeah, you're absolutely right. I totally screwed that one up.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling me out on that. And don't do it just so you can get them off your back, but do it from the perspective of, you know, it's part of being humble to be able to go, you know, yeah, I screwed that one up.
Yeah.
Let's get that taken care of.
Couldn't have gone worse.
Yeah, you know more about this than I do. Can you tell me what I did wrong and let's work through it?
Yeah, there's a compelling thing about dealing with reality, right?
Yeah.
Like if something occurs and someone brings something up and says, hey, this got really screwed up, and then you look at it and you realize you were the person that screwed it up, I mean, to what gain are you going to have by trying to act like those things weren't the things? Like then you're having to carry on some sort of deceit, and then you're reacting to it, and you're speaking to it, and you're trying to convince. You're basically trying to spend your time deceiving someone else, and like broad setting the world straight is just not going to happen with you ignoring reality. So
right.
if you screwed up, you just say, "Oh yeah, you know what? I really screwed that up fierce, didn't
right.
I?
Yep.
That's rough times. How do we fix it?"
Yeah.
And
yeah.
people have more respect for you when you do it.
Yeah, yeah. And here's the deal: maybe the consequences are. Or that maybe it's at your job and they fire you. Okay. I mean, here's the deal. That was your reality.
Right.
You might as well just deal with reality. A lot of times people spend trying to balance things that just simply aren't true, and trying to maintain relationships on false premises and circumstances on false premises. And like, It just simply isn't worth the energy associated with it. Just call things for what they are and let the chips fall where they may and then react to those. At least you know you're dealing with real things as opposed to like trying to constantly guess when something's going to fall or when they're going to figure you out or whatever. Like that's just no way to live. It's no way to live.
Agreed.
Tan, brew a great cup of coffee or tea.
Yes.
Look, once and for all, turning on the coffee maker and brewing a pot of coffee is totally fine, but you should also be aware how to make a perfect cup of coffee or tea for yourself, for your friends. Do a little reading. Perfect your technique. It's a skill you'll be glad you have forever.
I feel like I've never taken it to that extent where I've perfected my technique.
No, this
but
is...
But I feel like I can make a cup of joe that someone isn't going to spit out.
This is like the introvert hipster's guide to being a person.
Make sure you can trim up your own beard.
Yeah.
That's next, isn't it? That's 11.
Yeah, yeah. Know how much beard oil is too much. Love urban hipster.
Be able to sense the differences between your whiskeys.
Here's the thing. It's like... I've only once ever said, hey, that coffee's really good. And it happened at the Iowa Event Center. We were broadcasting from like some sort of pro-life thing, and like the Iowa Event Center was serving coffee. And that's the first time I ever had coffee. And I'm like, hey, man, that's pretty good. That's some good Joe. Every other coffee I've ever had, doesn't matter, like weak, strong, gas station, truck stop, high-end restaurant, I thought, yeah,
that's coffee.
That'll be fine. And so like I could not tell you a great – my wife got me a French press for Christmas. And I tried it, and I drank it, and I thought, tastes like coffee.
Like, hey, maybe you shouldn't have made it out of your 20s then if you can't perfect your cup of joe.
Yeah, like I guess I don't know the distinction here. I've drinking a ton of tea. I've done loose leaf. I've done the dabbles.
The dabbles?
Yeah, you know where you know like the Lipton's where it comes in the bag.
Oh, gotcha.
I've poured loose leaf into a bag and then put that in there, and like,
hey man, that's high society right there.
Yeah, that's all right. It's straight up all right. I was brewing chicory for a while, like tea. You can put chicory in there, and but anyway, it was tea.
Yeah, I'm. Where did this article come from?
That's Relevant Magazine.
Oh, there we go. All right, what's number 11?
Tip generously. What's just an extra buck or two to you can completely make your server's day. Make it a habit to tip generously, and if you're feeling daring, write a brief thank you note on your check.
If you're feeling daring, write a brief thank you note.
Yeah. Hey, sit still, Marge. I'm feeling bold.
Give me a second. Hey, if you want to be bold, put your name and number on a ticket and then give it to somebody. That's bold.
Why?
Because it's weird. But
because
it's bold.
You want to date them or you want
to
be a creeper?
I've done that before, and it's worked out to a date. But it's never worked further than the one date.
Yeah.
But that may be just me, not the mode of communication.
Yeah. You can, yeah, but you connected off a gimmick. You're forever going to be the gimmick, man.
Ah, valid point.
Although...
Hey, I don't do that anymore. We're good.
Oh, yeah, okay. Okay. 12, maintain a mentor. Your 20s are a great time to invest in a mentor. I think it's the other way around. Find someone you want to be like, be it your pastor, a friend, or even a peer, and commit to meeting with them regularly. It takes a little humility and a lot of dedication, but there's no ceiling to the value it will add to your life.
I like your comment about flipping around. Are you talking about being a mentor?
A couple things. One, you're investing in a mentor. It's probably the opposite. They're probably investing in you.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And I would actually say by the time you're, I would say mid to late 20s, assuming, you know, things are otherwise firing on most cylinders, I would say you're both.
Oh, absolutely.
I would say you need to start, there's the age of people that you can influence is still great to influence.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you need to be hanging around people that are getting it right.
I actually had this conversation with someone a couple weeks ago. I was telling them about some of the stuff that, you know, we on the show have gotten involved in and then we as a church have gotten involved in. And he started commenting on the fact, he was like, oh, man, you know, that's that you're like the most responsible 24-year-old I've ever met. And I said, first off, you do not want to make that comment. Because you don't know the rest of the world or my life. You just know these little parts you've heard. So
yeah.
Don't make that comment off what you know right now. Second off, it makes me sad that's the reaction. Is a 20-something that's willing to do something beyond take care of himself and try to figure out what he's going to do is enough to make someone warrant, oh, man, you're a great person.
Yeah.
There should be, I mean, droves of 20-somethings that are constantly trying to get involved in stuff because a lot of us don't have kids, which means we have a ridiculous amount of our time to our hands to do something constructive. Like, if you're not currently working two jobs and in school and you don't have kids and you're a 20-something, you know you have spent way too much time on the internet this last week. And you and I both know that there's plenty of time that you could have been doing going out and mentoring someone. finding something that's a cause in this world to get involved in, whether that be taking care of homeless people, whether that be going out and working with kids or taking care of the elderly, whatever it is, you have plenty of time to do that.
Yeah.
We have too many 30 and 40 somethings that are in families, have kids, that sacrifice time with their kids to go spend time with other people, when we have so many 20-somethings that are doing absolutely nothing with their time but figuring out how to make a better cup of coffee, when they could have very easily been making an average cup of coffee for 20 people outside of a bar and helping them get home.
Yeah.
It just makes me sad. So I would disagree with this. I think, yes, it's a good thing to have a mentor, but I think it's a better thing to go out and find a cause that means something to you and means something to somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's both. I mean, the truth is like, it's having a mentor is what helps you to move positively, right?
It means you have to have something to help aim towards.
Yeah, I'm not going to limit my growth by wherever I've come from. It allows me to keep moving forward. And frankly, finding someone like that is difficult.
Yeah.
And that's actually the problem, right? It's like, if you don't start mentoring people, like, we don't have people that can mentor others, right? You get old enough and you got a generation full of people who could use some help and nobody's prepared for anything. They never learned it from anybody else and they're never doing it. It's the same discipleship problem.
Yep.
We are short on people that can adequately mentor folks. But like, again, back to the discipleship discussion. Is when you think mentor, don't overload that thing. Like, I've had relationships like this, and like, it has never been any more complicated than, hey, let's meet up for some breakfast. Hey, what are you reading? I might have a few things that I'm reading that I might share with somebody. I might just be like, hey, how are things going? And I'll pray for those guys. And that's it. Like, it's time. I'll spend time with people, and I don't have a whole life to offer them, right? But the outpouring of the rest of my life becomes part of those conversations. Wives, kids, jobs. Like, these are things that otherwise be part of a mentoring type of relationship. And like, those are great. They're absolutely great. And it doesn't, all it is time. And it says, this matters to me. This person matters to me. We'll make time to do it.
Yeah. One of the best ways that I've heard it put, and don't get stuck on the numbers by any means, but I've heard, find somebody 10 years younger than you. Find somebody and spend time with that person and help them. Find someone at your level. Figure out a couple relationships where they're at the same kind of level that you are, so you can connect with them and have some relevance with them at the same time.
Yep.
And then find somebody 10 years older than you. Watch them. Figure out what's going on. Go to dinner with them and their family. Watch them with their kids. Just figure out, hey, how is that dude living his life right now?
Yeah.
Like, that dude loves Jesus and he loves his kids and he loves his wife. I'm just gonna watch him. I'm gonna go hang out with him, and not be creepy about it. Just go and hang out with the dude, spend a night with him, figuring out, what are you doing with your family, with your kids, and that's it. That's the whole deal.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be, like you said, it doesn't have to be, hey, sit down and in front of a chalkboard, teach me your ways. It's just, let me watch the way that person lives.
Yeah.
And what's their relationship with Christ look like? What's their relationship with their wife? What's their relationship with their kids? What's their community look like? Because I want to look more like that. I want to look more like Jesus, and that dude currently looks more like Jesus. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Like, I mean, like, it's all like, I consider myself to always need a mentor, like, no matter what age I am, like, because I feel like you won't even really understand life until you really hit 30 and to begin with.
Right.
You know, like, that's when life really starts. Like, I mean, I consider myself, like, I can look at myself, like, I still feel 18 and stuff. I just turned 30, so,
right.
You know I need a mentor, you know, like,
that's
and
cool.
I got real responsibilities.
Right.
Like, I got to really take care of the family and the kids and you know, like, working. So
right,
I know,
absolutely.
I understand, but in the inside, I still feel like a kid with bills, you know, like.
Yeah,
but I think
at the end of the day, like, the mentor is so strong because when you think about it, like, who can be a better mentor than Jesus?
Right.
You know? So at the end of the day, who's Jesus' mentor?
Well,
Joseph.
Yeah. That's interesting. I guess I never thought about that.
Yeah, like, so if Joseph was Jesus' mentor, like, a lot of people don't really pay attention to Joseph and why God really picked him to be the guy to mentor Jesus.
Yeah.
If Jesus didn't see Joseph doing the things that he did, then he could have took a whole nother route in life.
Yeah, that's true. We don't really hear much about Jesus from the 1 to the 30 section. And, I mean, that was Joseph in front of him and him learning in the synagogues, the other dudes in front of him. So, yeah, I'd agree with that.
It's a good thought, though, too, is recognizing when you think of the role that that fathers can play in lives, whether for sons or daughters, and when that's missing, like the opportunity for mentorship and stuff is even stronger, right? And that's where some of the gaps that we see with folks, and that's why, frankly, I know it's hard, fellas, when you get to a certain age and you got your kids and you got responsibilities and maybe you got church stuff or whatever, and you feel like you're completely tied up. But you got to try to find time to be that for somebody.
Yeah.
And just know that, like, this doesn't mean that you're committed to have people live at your place and be a taxi service for them. All you're saying is that, like, somebody means something to me. I can make time to be with folks and provide some mm-hmm. sort of relationship for them. And you don't have to be overly wise, and you don't have to have a, like, there's guys, one of the things that always feels like a gap to me is, like, there's all these, I watch some pastors speak, and there's always, like, these 50, 60-year-old pastors, and these guys have got stories, I mean, crazy stories all the time. There's not a like sermon that goes by or a talk they ever have, and they got like 10 stories that come from their lives, and they're right on, they're perfect. And I look around and I'm like, I don't have any stories, man. I don't have any stories, and it makes me feel like, hey, I'm inadequate for this thing. But the truth is that, like, I mean, that's cool that they got stories, but the truth is, like, mentorship comes with the same thing. You think someone has to have, like, a bunch of wisdom, or that you have to be particularly attuned for mentorship type of stuff. But it's like, you just gotta be there. That's what it is. It's just presence, man. Are you there, and do you care? And if you can nail those two things, like, as long as you're following Jesus, it'll be easy to take somebody with you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, part of being a Jesus follower is understanding the fact that your perfection is not what gets people to Jesus. Like, you will never be a good enough at anything to be someone that's going to bring somebody to Christ. Your job is to be honest about your relationship with Jesus, following after him, and let him shine through the stuff you're not good at.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep. All right. Holy cats, this is taking longer than I thought. But 13, bite your tongue. Know how to pick your battles. It's okay for you to be right without getting everyone to admit you're right. It's okay for you to be offended by something without everyone knowing you're offended. Understand when you should go to bat for what you're thinking and when you can let it go.
God is working on this with me.
Progress?
Yes. Okay. I'm not there yet, but God's definitely showing me that that's a problem, that I have too much pride and I need to get rid of it.
All right, that's fair. 14, stay well rested. Late nights will come, but our generation has forgotten the value in a good night's sleep. Push yourself to go to bed earlier. Use your downtime wisely. Resting is just as important as being productive. In fact, you'll be more productive if you're resting well and often.
I'm going to say that I'm working on this, and I mean I'm working on it as in, like, I started like 4 days ago.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Like, that's it. Like, I need to get more than 4 hours of sleep. And so I decided to start having a rule where I turn off my electronics as close to an hour before I plan on going to bed as I can.
Uh-huh.
And pick it up, either my Bible or another book, and start reading.
Okay.
And then just disconnect and connect into a book.
Yeah.
It's working, but it's been difficult.
Yeah,
that's
been slow. Yep.
But I still have 6 years to get this down, because I'm not 25 yet, so I still have time to get this down.
Okay.
Is that the right way to take that, or is that a procrastinator's way to take it?
Yeah, that's a procrastinator's way to take it.
All right, fine.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's not how it worked, boo.
Well, I'm trying.
How you working though, man? It's a start.
That's the truth.
15, respond to criticism. Defending yourself against criticism is easy. Graciously accepting it is harder, but the improvements it can make in your life and work are wild. I don't know if they're wild. That seems a bit oversold.
I've had to get good at this in my job as a trainer. Part of my job is to actually, I open myself to feedback, anonymous feedback, every class that I train. It's part of our infrastructure. We get feedback from our agents or our trainees on how we did, and it is completely unfiltered feedback. And so I have to sift through that. And if somebody hated me, they'll tell me. And I have to figure out how to take that and respond to it correctly. And I've been a trainer for about 3.5 years, and I didn't start getting good at this until about 6 months ago.
Now, would you say that the improvements it made in your life are wild?
Not in my job, but it's definitely taken. It's something that I've built up in the work environment that I've been able to translate slightly to my personal life. Not like a lot to where I'd say it's a wild transformation, but it's there.
I'm just trying to find the right way to understand this wild.
Yeah, like, I think that's overselling the concept of being able.
Hey, your criticism has wildly improved my life.
No, I don't think I've ever said that to anybody.
Remember that criticism usually isn't meant to be a personal attack. That's actually not true. it is most certainly personal.
Yes, it's
if you can learn to take it in the spirit it is offered, people will have fewer things to criticize you about in the future. I think that the distinction here is to, do you trust where the criticism coming from? Do you trust who it's coming from? And regardless of what it is, if you trust who it is, then you should take it in. If it's a destructive person, then what they think, you know, rightfully becomes irrelevant.
Right.
The problem is if you're a bit of a douche yourself, you're not going to be able to make that distinction well. And then you're only just going to trust people that say good things about you. That's why the community is a better filter for that type of thing.
I think a better skill to have leaving your 20s would be to be able to vet out the criticism that you get and find the important nugget that you can take and improve on.
Actually, that happens to me at times when my wife has said something to me, and like I'll ask some fellas around and say, hey, man, my wife may have said the following about me, and then like sometimes we'll be like, oh man, maybe she's just having a rough spot. Or sometimes I'll go, yeah man, that's you to a T.
That's exactly
you need
true.
To stop acting like that. I'm like, well, crap, okay. Thanks, boys. And then I go home and I say, yeah, you were right about that. Right on.
I talked to the dudes. They agree with you.
Yeah, I plan to be wildly transformed from here forward. 16, write a cover letter. Filling out an application is a pretty simple process, but in all likelihood, the job you really want is going to take more than a list of references and previous employers. Cover letters require some effort, but it can be the difference between don't call us, we'll call you, and when can you start? I've never written a cover letter in my life.
I was going to say, my resume, like I've had, I learned very quickly on that my resume doesn't need to be just for my eyes only, mm-hmm. and I need to get as many people as possible to tell me that it sucks until those people stop saying it sucks and start telling me it's getting better. That's the more important thing that I've ever had. I've never had a single person go, hey, man, that resume is looking crisp. Make sure you got that cover letter, though, because that's going to be the make it or break it deal.
My experience is actually most hiring folks don't read it.
Yeah, like, I do hiring sometimes. I've never once read a cover letter.
Yeah.
The only time I have, it ended up turning out for the worst.
Yeah, so like, and here's the deal. Take this for what it's worth, because this probably just falls into the bin opinion category. But like, your resume needs to be sufficient enough that I don't automatically disqualify you from the job. Past that, I really care what I'm talking to you about. Your resume is not as relevant to me for the types of job that I would be involved hiring for.
What I will say, and I would agree with that, what I will say is I think one resume thing that I've taken that's helped me quite a bit, you should not submit the same resume every time you apply for a job. It should be in some way tailored to what that job is looking for.
Right.
Whether that be switching around your bullet points to where your most important things that have to do with what they're looking for, like the job or the skills requirements, or you know what will you be doing on the job. You need to tailor your bullets or whatever you want to look at it in your formatting on your resume. You need to tailor it to be, well, this is how I show that. This is how I show that. Those are the most important pieces to them. So if I can say anything to 20-somethings, it's your resume should not be, oh, that's my resume from back in 2014. I'll just make sure I update it to where the years are correct. That's not how you should take an approach from a resume perspective.
No, yeah. And like if you're applying for a job to become a welder and your top accomplishment is when you worked at the Chiquita Banana Factory and you were top sticker man in the third quarter of 2011, like, I don't care.
I won the science fair back in high school. Well, you're applying for a janitor position. We don't care.
I once made tripe as part of my cultural fair in ninth grade. It was delicious.
I made my own beef jerky once. It was pretty sweet.
Can I be a machinist here? 17, be alone.
Yeah.
Or as we say, be alone-y. The millennial generation prizes community. Deal with that, which is very good. But it tends to come at the cost of fearing loneliness. The truth is, being alone can do you a lot of good. Be able to sit quietly, reading, writing, praying, or just listening to the silence. And use that time to truly evaluate how your spirit is. So I didn't see that coming.
Here's the deal, man. I feel like I should have been listening to this sitting next to a fireplace with a Snuggie on. Like, this is getting ridiculous.
Loneliness is exercise for your heart. I can't take this one anymore.
Oh, jeez, no. Just stop. Okay. Here's the deal. So from a Jesus perspective, I agree. You should be able to be alone. I think that that most of the 20-somethings that I know around me that have difficulty with being alone can't stand themselves.
They
have no way to be able to stand themselves, and therefore, if they're alone, they have to face that. If you're with somebody else, you can focus on them, or at least focus on how they make you feel versus how awful you are.
Yeah, right.
And I think that that one of the biggest things, you know, like I said, from a Jesus thing is, you know, learn how to be alone, but focus your time on building the relationship between you and God. You know, don't take that aloneness like, oh, I can't wait till God sends me a wife, or I can't wait till God sends me a husband, or, you know, I can't wait to have kids. Spend that time growing in your love for Christ and spend that time taking care of other people, building those relationships. God doesn't have you not married so that you can sit there and sulk. You know, you've got that time to build serious foundations with Jesus and then go and take that out into the world.
Well, yeah, everything's a we, right? I could be sitting out on my back porch looking out and nobody else in my house, and I could reasonably say, hey, God, what do we got going on?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's
absolutely.
Not just, what do my, hey, I, hey, don't bother me. I'm evaluating my spirit.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like what somebody says when they got gas when they, and they, somebody put them outside.
That's
you
awesome.
Go evaluate your spirit out
yeah.
there.
I will be using that going forward. This is definitely something that I'm not good at, and I'm trying to get better because, you know, I prayed for years, you know, God, and also specifically I would say, God, turn me into the man I'm supposed to be worthy of one of your daughters. But then I wouldn't spend any time trying to become that.
Right.
Like, all I would do is I would spend that time praying for God to transform me, and he's sitting there going, Bova, you have hours every day where you can do exactly what you want me to do, and you're not.
Right.
How about you put down your video games and you start spending some time learning about me? And I'm just like, God, I really need you to make me a man that I'm supposed to be for one of your daughters. He's yeah. like, you can go do the dishes, and you could probably figure out your laundry that you haven't touched in a week and a half, and then you could be more of a man yeah. that's worthy of one of my daughters, so she doesn't have to take care of that for you, you boob.
Yeah, right. Hey, I want to know you deeper while I continue to do nothing
yeah, exactly.
that gets me to know you deeper.
God, really, just make me the man I'm supposed to be. Well, stop making Totino's pizzas for dinner every single night. Get off your butt and go do something.
I know you wrote a bestseller, but I don't want to breach that. Can you just make me a man as I sit?
Hey, man, Deuteronomy is that one in the beginning, right? I don't know much more than that. Man. And that's righteous indignation for myself because I was an idiot. And I still am in many ways. I'm still working on that. But if you're worried about being alone, maybe you should spend some time actually getting to know your Creator.
Well, I think this one is not necessarily implying that you should worry about being alone. It's that you should be able to be alone.
True.
But it's yeah, the same basic premise holds, though, is that, like, I don't, again, am I leaning on someone else to provide my validation of who I am, what my identity is, blah, blah, blah. But also, you know, do I, if I can't just be...
Right.
And have some downtime. Like, the notion of rest is not just sleep. Like, it's rest.
Right.
And so that is good things. I just, I think there's some truth here. I'm just throwing off the wording is stupid. loneliness is exercise for your heart.
Your spirit. I think that's a huge problem with today, though. I think a lot of people is scared to be alone.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot of people, like, a lot of people are really scared to be alone, and they really can't think by themselves most of the time. So most people just draw energy from the next person to make it day by day. So,
well, that's true. So, and I think that the barrier there, right, is that you're thieves, right?
Right.
Like you only can take from other people. And if you can't be by yourself, if you can't have something that is kind of centered around you, and frankly, you know, if you find your identity in Jesus, being able to be confident in that alone, that opens up anybody else to be able to influence who you are. And so when what they have to offer you is negative, then they'll drown you in it.
Yeah.
And you don't have any other options.
Yeah, there's a difference between being an extrovert and being a leech.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You don't need
yeah.
to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't give in to anybody else if constantly you're taking them because you have to be around someone like
right.
that. Yeah.
Well, it can go the other way, though. Like you say, like you taking energy from somebody positive, then that's a good thing, you know, but... Like you say, like, it's a lot of energy in the air, so, like, you can take the wrong energy. Like, if somebody's having a bad day, they can push their bad day on you, and then you don't even know why you
right.
into it, or, you know. So it's like, energy is a big problem right now.
Yeah, I mean, it can have an impact, but I think that's kind of the point, right? It's like, are you able to, knowing that other people aren't perfect, if you have no grounding on your own and you're dependent on them to kind of influence who you are, what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. You're going to have a hard time being able to stay consistent in a world full of people who often don't act consistently.
Yep.
Yeah. Number 19, prioritize the important over the urgent. There are two types of demands on your life. The first and easiest to focus on are the urgent, paying your rent, getting ahead in work, etc. The second and much harder to tackle are the important, your spiritual life, your relationship with your family, and looking after the health of your soul. Why do we have to say things like this? Know the difference between what's urgent and what's important, and know which one matters more.
The principle behind it, I can agree with. I think that's a deal. If you are constantly flighty in everything you do because every single thing is prioritized as urgent and important, you'll never get anything important done.
Yeah.
You know, if every single thing, you know, from paying your bills to making sure that you check your Facebook to, making sure that you text your friend back to, responding to certain things. And then, you know, if you prioritize your Facebook is the same as your laundry, every time those things are battling, it's a problem. So I agree with the concept of being able to prioritize, and find what needs to be done at the beginning of the day and what can wait till the end.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm in on board to it. 20, hold on to a good friend. There's going to be a lot of transition in your 20s as both you and your friends float from job to job and location to location because you obviously are also friends with all urban hipsters bouncing from place to place.
Going from coffee shop, perfecting that perfect cup.
The thing is, people get older, they change. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you can't always hang with everybody you knew from your 20s.
That's very true.
Yeah.
You know, like, you grow as a person, you know, like, some people go left and you go right and... You know, like, it's not good to hold on to things that God wants you to move away from. So, I don't know.
That's a bit like what we talked about earlier, clinging to the old times, right? Like, you can't let go of who you were in the past when you were associated with all these people. So you continue to try to drag those relationships in a life or an environment that can no longer sustain it. And I think Nick's right. Like, sometimes you just got to let some stuff go, and you got to figure out what are the things that God has you holding on to, and what are the things you can just part ways with.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see.
All right.
That's it. That's 20. Boo. How do you stack up here? Say pretty good, huh?
I'm never gonna say pretty good. I hope that I got room to grow.
20 things every 20 something should know how to do. What did you stink the most at?
What I stink the most at?
Limiting your online life.
Yes.
Let's see. Mentor, maybe a little bit mentor. You're doing all right there. Bite your tongue. Stay well rested. You stink.
Yeah, well rested. I'm terrible. And online presence. I'm terrible.
And write a cover letter. You don't do. And be alone. Was just flowery.
Hey, where's this be alone coming from, man?
That's 17.
Nobody says that.
Yeah, be alone. Yeah, that's what
it
is.
All right, whatever.
Anyway, you're listening.
I think we should come up with our own list of 20.
No, that is a good idea.
From a Christ follower's perspective, what are the 20 things you should do getting out of your 20s?
Let's put the thought on that. That's a good call. You're listening to Live from the Path. You can hook up with us during the week at livefromthepath.org. You can hear past clips from the show, full podcast videos, interviews with the bands, some performances from the bands, also some games and stuff you can play if you want to do some Secular versus Solomon. Or some other quiz action, all that stuff is available out on the website. We have a few things to read. We just can't seem to do that consistently, but I got a couple blog posts out there you can check out. The Tim Timmons album review, other things that, unfortunately it's there when we get around to things. They're important to me, but, obviously not prioritized well. So anyway, enjoy that to the best of your ability.
Let's prioritize this, that 20 things that you should know from a Christ follower's perspective before you leave your 20s. That's going to be the next thing you can read from Live from the Path.
Okay.
And if you have any ideas, or anything you'd like to chime in on that list, you can email us at info@livefromthepath.org.
Yeah. Or hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, message, post, whatever. I'd be kind of interested in those things for you guys that are listening. What's part of the 20 things every 20 something should know how to do, from your perspective?
All right.
Okay.
We got time for some Dear Life of Beth?
Yeah, let's at least do one, maybe a couple.
All right. Dear Life of the Path. We have an adult son and daughter who can't handle money and can't keep a job. They need to read our list of 20 things you should do before you leave your 20.
Be alone.
Should we tell them they are not going to inherit everything we have when my wife and I are gone? Holy cats, hitting hard. We have bailed them out of more trouble more than once, but they don't seem to learn. Oh, they are in their 30s and 40s. Oh, wow. And neither one is looking for a job. Anything we left them would soon be squandered, and there are many organizations that could put the money to good use.
Yep.
We would leave them something, but nothing like what they expect. So, tell them or not. Perplexed in the South.
Yeah, you tell them.
Yeah.
Not because you're trying to force their hand or beat on them or anything. It's just the reality. Hi, you're 30, 40 years old. You can't seem to handle your money well. You're going to squander it. And we want our money to go, we earned it, and we want it to go to good use. And so, because we think this will negatively impact your life, we're going to give it to somebody else.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think the loving thing as a parent to do would be to make certain that they don't squander that and set them up for more failure. You know, the quicker they go through the hard lesson of learning how to take care of themselves, the better they're going to be in 20 years. So,
Yeah, I think like part of the reaction is to think, am I saying this because I'm trying to prod them and say, if you don't change your ways, then I won't give you blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it that way. I would just say, look, this is what we're going to do. And the truth is, it's your money. So if they straighten up their ways and 10 years from now you want to change it, you say, hey, great, we've changed what we're going to do. But like, there's no reason to dangle it. Because that can't be a good enough motivation to do the stuff that they need to. They need to change it because they need to change it anyway.
Right. Okay. Secular says, in the back of my mind is echoing the Boy Scout motto, be prepared. You should definitely tell your children now, while there's still time for them to get off their posteriors, and start preparing for their financial futures. All right.
I think we're is the impression that they are simply waiting it out because they think their parents are going to die soon? And so they're not going to do anything looking, because, I mean, that seems like it might be a while off.
I guess so.
Is that ever all right?
No. That's
pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's a terrible, I'm trying to hold out for the kids and hope they're not that way. It sure seems like they are, but like I want to hold on to that one thing that they're not holding out for their parents.
Here's the only question I have, I suppose, is that if you have two kids and they're 30s and 40s and they both are acting this way, maybe you stink as a parent. Is that the right thought?
No, sometimes, you know, kids can go off and do what they want to do. Like
kids got the same problem?
But you got to think about it. Sometimes people be in their second childhood. Like, that's what it sounds like. It seems like they real content with whatever their life, however their life is going, so they content with that. But, you know, like God tell us, don't be content with anything, you know, because stuff got to change. So, and you, it's not in us to understand how it changed, but when things do change, that's how it do.
I feel like you might be overly gracious to the parents. I'm just saying, like, you got one kid that goes off the rails. I hear you, man. That happens. But you got two kids off the rails in the same way. Maybe you spoiled them kids.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how they ended up that way.
Yep. Content with the situation and basically feel like they really comfortable with how they living and, you know, probably no responsibilities, but.
I mean, I'd be comfortable with how I was living if I thought I had a good chunk of change coming and my parents were going to die soon.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I feel like my parents don't have any money and they'll probably live for another 30 years. So that just ain't my reality.
Yeah, and then I think it's like bad luck to even wish things like that, like, to try to speed the process up so you can get something. Like, I don't think you would spend your money really good after that. Like, I don't even know how you can sleep at night doing it.
That doesn't impact the advice, I guess. I'm just thinking, like, you got two kids off the rails like that. Maybe you contributed. All right, else you got?
All right, one more. Dear Life of the Path. Oh, man, what is going on? My phone keeps wanting to kick me out of this thing. Give me a second. It's going to be a good one. It's going to be awful, actually, as a matter of fact. Give me a second.
No, that's compelling.
Well, the Dear Life of the Path website is not one.
What else do you have?
All right. Dear Life of the Path, I have a good friend who is a bedwetter. It's obvious because he's constantly doing laundry and his home smells bad at times.
Mm-hmm.
We once shared a hotel room, and I was awakened in the middle of the night by a strong smell of urine. He tries to hide his problem, but seems to be doing little, if anything, to find a solution for it. I want to persuade him to get some help, but I don't feel like I don't feel comfortable saying anything, and I don't want to embarrass him. What can I do, Life on the Path? Concerned friend in Michigan.
Well, wait, can we at least understand, like, let's agree that you've overstated some of the facts, for one, right? You can't say he's done little to nothing to try to improve it when you're too embarrassed to even talk to him about it. Like, how do you even know that?
Oh, that's a good point.
To make the case that he's, I mean, maybe the guy's working hard, maybe he's on pills. But you have no idea what he's done. So at least let's start from the premise that, like, he's not being, you don't know whether he's disregarding the problem for what.
That's fair. You need to kind of buck up and go talk to the dude.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, let's just start there. Like, don't presuppose what he's up to or what you know. I mean, I don't know how you say that. Say, look, Cecil, I don't know how else to put this, but do you wet your pants while you're sleeping?
Hey, man, I remember one time we stayed in a hotel together. It smelled really bad, like urine.
Yeah.
Was that you? Because it wasn't me.
Did you miss the John? And I mean, hit the bed?
Did you miss the bathroom entirely? All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean,
so start with having an actual conversation. That way you can see if they actually have done something. And if they, what happens if it turns out the dude has legitimately done nothing? What do you say?
Then I say, hey, man, you got to straighten that out. It smells like urine in here.
Just straightforward, huh?
Here's the thing. What else are you going to do? There's no euphemism for this. There's just no, like, hey, I thought perhaps a rhinoceros came in here and accidentally, you know, treated this like the Amazon. Or you're wet in the bed. Cecil?
That's awesome. I created this shadow puppet play to talk to you about what might be a problem.
I picked this book up for you at the local bookshop.
Everybody please.
Just not there.
Just... That would be the greatest bedwetting book ever. Everybody pees, just not there.
Yeah. So there's no fanciness here. Say, Cecil, do you wet the bed?
All right,
I feel like you might wet the bed. Do
be
you
a
wet
good
the
friend
bed?
By being straightforward.
Yeah, and here's the deal. If you're not close enough to this guy, A, how'd you get in a hotel room with him?
Right, you're creepy.
And second, like, you're over at his place. I feel like you're close enough. It's just time to bring it up.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah. What's the secular?
All right, secular says, what would you want your friend to do if the situation were reversed and you were the person with the bedwetting problem? Friends communicate with each other. Talk privately with this person. Say you think there may be a problem and urge him to discuss it with a urologist. There is help for bedwetters. Medications as well as mechanical devices that in many cases can fix the problem.
Hold on. Mechanical devices?
I did not plan on divulging that one.
What does that do?
I don't want to know.
Hold on. Go ahead, keep
please
talking.
Oh, man.
Bedwetting machine.
But only if the sufferers and bedwetters do suffer. No help is available and are willing to ask for it.
Well, there's an alarm.
What?
Hold on. Bedwettingstore.com. Just a minute.
What?
Hold tight.
Ben.
Roger Wireless Bedwetting Alarm System. $129. This is an adult with a problem, and you're gouging him. $130.
Wait, so it senses wetness and then just kind of gives you a heads up, like, hey, man, isn't it too late then?
It's a pair of boxies that's got a wetness sensor on it.
I feel like it's too late at that point in time. That's not stopping anything. You've peed the pants.
What the heck is this? Hold on.
You haven't fixed anything. You just now are more aware of the fact that you wet the bed. You still have to change your sheets and comforter.
Why is all this so expensive? Hey, there's an app.
No.
There's a Dry Matters app.
Oh, no. Please don't tell me that's actually what they're called.
Here's the thing. It's like, whatever's going on with your body, let's just say that, like, no one chooses to wet the bed. Let's be clear on that, okay?
Right.
So, like, I'm not trying to necessarily make light of this thing. I'm just saying, like, I don't understand how these things are so expensive. What could be in these fancy underpants? What are they, Mormon blessed? Why are they $130 to pick up?
They do have a moisture sensor built into them. That doesn't sound cheap.
Here's a Clippo bedwetting alarm. Look at all these. Hold on.
Are you going to throw them up?
I can't. It's on the other computer.
Okay.
Malum Ultimate Bedwetting Alarm is $100. It's been rated by 1,292 people. They come in multiple colors. What?
You gotta be the fastest guy in the world to make it to the back.
Right, it's like it senses it, and now you're running and jumping. Like, I feel like it's too late.
Like, to next point, a legit guy can't stop midstream. Like, I assume a bedwetter's
got... Let alone a dude that's unconscious.
What else do they sell here? Hold on. Treatment kits, bedding, watches, vibrating watches. Why is it? What does that do?
It probably vibrates your wrist when it senses moisture. Again, too late.
Or does it just remind you to go to the bathroom? Oh, yeah. Hold on. Here we go. Oh, this one's for kids. It said, here's a review. I bought the Vibralite 3 vibrating watch for my 10-year-old son. He needed to be reminded to use the bathroom, and this watch did the job. Okay, that makes sense.
That's interesting. So, like, it's preemptive.
Yeah. Briefs. Here we go. Male protective vinyl briefs. $20.
That's a diaper.
Yeah.
That is a diaper.
No, they have disposables as a separate category.
Oh, jeez.
Hold on.
A reusable diaper, then. You got the cloth diaper.
Male absorbent briefs?
Yeah, exactly. At what point in time is it the dude has to choose between, hey, man, do I go to the bathroom? I guess, like, my pants will stop it.
I mean, some of this I get, like, this is, like, incontinence stuff. Like, when you're older.
Right.
That doesn't seem like the guy that we were talking about. But boy, I just did not have any idea.
I'm weirded out at how interested we are at this.
Bedwettingstore.com. check that out.
Don't favorite that.
Decal skins for Clippo alarms.
Oh, jeez.
All right, we got to let you go. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us on Life in the Path. We appreciate it. If you're a bedwetter and you've never heard of bedwettingstore.com, I feel like this is the place. It's time to admit that you had a problem and seek wisdom from it. Things I don't know that are existed.
Please don't email us.
No, I don't really need to know about your stuff. I'm just saying, go check that. This is where I would go. Heck, man, I wouldn't even know where else to start but bedwettingstore.com.
Well, there you go.
Okay. All right, I'm in. All right, thanks for hanging out with us. And in the meantime, we'll see you next week. Be faithful in means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Bath.